in that little restaurant lot and go inside. He had never been in the restaurant before, and yet to his surprise, he encountered an old acquaintance, Bill Miller, and the two sat down and talked a while. It came out that Bill was in trouble. His company, unable to find a distributor for its products, was about to go under. Warren said maybe he could help. Within 2 hours, he had done so by making arrangements with his company to distribute Bill's wares. It had seemed so pointless, stopping the car and going into a strange restaurant in response to a nameless impulse. But the better you know Warren Felty, the less unusual it all sounds. You see, Warren Felty was, well, you might have called him a chronic Good Samaritan. He tended to show up precisely when and where needed. Warren's role as such premiered back in February 1940. Then he was traveling a lonely highway outside town. He was in the middle of the night. Warren saw a wrecked car pulled over. The man had a man-sized hole in the windshield. A long way beyond where the car had hit a concrete culvert, he found the man lying unconscious. The victim had apparently rocketed through the windshield on impact. Warren realized there was not time to go get help, so he carried the man to his car and drove him to the hospital. He would be 4 days in a coma, but he survived, thanks to Warren Felty. And his career as an angel of mercy had only begun. 5 years later, Warren was a POW in a Nazi prison camp, the infamous Stalag Luft III in Sagan. He'd been piloting a B-17 out of the 96th Bomb Group in England until there was barely enough left of his plane to jump from. And then in January 1945, because Stalag Luft III was in the path of an advancing Red Army, Warren's captors sent the POWs to Spremberg, 75 miles away, in the area's worst blizzard in almost a century, and with the daytime temperature dipping below zero, the journey became a death march. And due to the mass exhaustion, the hunger, the terrible cold, nobody stopped to assist a fallen comrade. Nobody, that is, except Warren Felty. The prisoner who had collapsed in the snow was from a different compound in the camp, therefore a stranger to Warren. Unconscious, he would soon have been dead from exposure. The others, prisoners and guards alike, simply trudged past him, but Warren Felty, himself half dead, pulled the stricken man from what might have been his frigid grave, and stumbling through snow 2 feet deep, virtually carried him the 5 remaining miles to safety. So it makes some sense now, doesn't it, that Warren should have pulled off that road in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania that day, and by pure chance encountered Bill Miller just in time to save his entire career. It seemed helpful Felty was always doing that kind of thing, and more remarkably still, for the very same person. You see, William M. Miller, to whose rescue Warren came in that Harrisburg restaurant, was the same William M. Miller whom he had pulled from a snowbank in World War II, and was the same William M. Miller whose life he had saved after the highway accident 5 years before that. In all their lives prior to their eventual successful business relationship, they'd met only briefly, precisely 3 times. Now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest continues to be Greg Haskin, who's the executive director of CoLab. We're going to talk about the county budget and how the Board of Supervisors broke the $1 billion barrier. We're also going to talk about the never-ending saga of the Paso Robles Groundwater Authority and this Prop 26 action that they're going to be taking and what to expect next, and taxes and a whole bunch of other stuff that's going on in the county.
Lots of good news.
Well, lots of, Greg, welcome. I'm glad you're here. And I want to thank you for being so instrumental in getting Katie to get on. I know how busy she is. And, sure. But
She's a great guest and all kinds of insight. I wish we had a dozen Katie Grimes covering California politics, because there's so much that we need to know that is just not being told.
Right, yeah. Right. Certainly, yeah. It's certainly on local media.
Yeah. And unless not just local. Yeah, local media is even worse, I think. I don't even know if that qualifies as media, what we have covering San Luis Obispo County. But Katie is a real gem, and we're lucky to have her.
Well, yeah, and again, we'll talk a little bit about the CoLab dinner later on again. But call in with questions, folks, or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Greg, let's start with the county budget. I think this is an underreported story here. Talk a little bit about how the county broke the $1 billion barrier, and then what are the likely impacts of the California budget deficit and the cutbacks from the federal government?
Yeah. Well, the easy explanation for how we've come to be a $1 billion county is that we keep spending, and we're spending like crazy. We have 2,600 employees. We have countless departments and divisions and employee programs and consultants and so on and so forth. And we're just spending like crazy. But that may come somewhat to an end before too long, because our county budget is stagnant. We're not growing our revenues. We're not growing our economy. And we're starting to feel the pain, because the county keeps spending more than it's looking like it's going to be able to take in. And it is required by our state constitution to have a balanced budget. They can't print money. They can't go into debt. They can't raid the funds of various other forms of government. So they have to limit themselves to what they can bring in. And we're starting to see that we're not bringing in enough. And so we're looking at some economic development opportunities. We're looking at ways to raise fees and taxes and so forth. But we're going to be hurting this time around.
So it seems to me that one of the drivers of this is that there's an attitude, so to speak, on the county level that, well, the state is giving us free money, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And then, of course, a lot of this was really driven by all the COVID stuff that happened over the last 5 years, and all that money's drying up and going away. But in the meantime, the county ends up creating a certain level of cost and obligation when they take on another state program, right?
And expectation as well.
Right.
The state, we 41% of our county budget comes from state funds. And a lot of that are pass-through funds for health and human services programs, homeless, mental health, substance abuse, those kinds of things that the state used to take care of. They kind of shifted a lot of that responsibility over to the counties. They said, we'll help pay for a lot of these activities. But now the state is broke. The state, according to the Legislative Analyst's Office, is $18 billion upside down. Gavin Newsom just proposed a $348 billion budget. Nobody can really figure out where he's thinking he's going to get that money. If the state turns out to start to go broke and they can't pay these bills, we're going to be left holding the bag. And, we take those funds and we pass them through to all kinds of programs around the county. Some of them are really fantastic programs. Some of them, you're not so sure, but they're all expensive, and they all have people that depend on that kind of revenue. And so, I don't know if we're going to end up seeing more homeless on the streets or more mental health issues. We just don't know what to expect. And the county supervisors have admitted to that. They've said, we're going to move forward with our budget planning as if there's no problem. And then if the problem comes up, we'll have to get back together and reconfigure what we're doing financially. But it's going to be messy.
So, you mentioned 41% of the county budget is state and federal aid.
Uh-huh.
So I guess the question is, do you think that's a wise way to approach this problem?
No, I mean, I hate to depend on the state of California for anything financially right now, because we have this governor that's trying to look like he's everybody's hero. You know, he's everything to everyone, and he's spending like crazy because he doesn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. He wants to buy lots of joy and happiness out there. And, so, you know, I think he's going to go out with a bang. I would have liked to have asked Katie about this, you know, spending this kind of money. And then if he leaves the governor's office and the state is broke and the state is in financial trouble, that doesn't look good for him. So I don't know where he thinks he's going with such a generous budget, but it's not going to be easy to do.
He's not going to be accountable for it, and whoever the next governor is, whether it's Democrat or Republican,
yeah, he'll blame them.
They're going to be the ones that get blamed.
Yeah.
So
he'll say he left the state in good shape, and they spent all this money doing all these great things, and the next person that came along goofed it all up.
Yeah.
But I think that the truth will be pretty apparent that it was his doing that caused us all these troubles.
Let me ask you this. I mean, you know, I know the county has kind of been on hiatus here. The Board of Supervisors has been on hiatus from their meetings. They're going to start up again, I guess, next week.
Right.
And they're going to take up the budget. Are there any pressing issues that they're going to be dealing with on the budget?
Well, what they're going to do is they've spent this time, they will have a one-month interim, and staff and all the departments have kind of organized their budgetary needs, and they've submitted those to the county executive officer. Then he brings those forward to the Board of Supervisors over the next few months in sort of a review mode, and they go into a formal budget hearing process. It's a three-day deal in June where they actually, you know, start hammering out numbers. But we're going to get a good preview over the next couple of months as these departmental budgets come dribbling in.
Well, and you point out in your latest newsletter that you know, it's also a federal problem, because under the One Big Beautiful Bill, there's a reduction in SNAP money, the loss of CalFresh, as well as Medi-Cal eligibility.
Right. And so what they're doing is they're tightening down the requirements. They're making sure that there isn't fraud. But I think there are going to be people that are going to get caught up with eligibility questions and so forth, and they're going to fall to our county safety net, because the federal government isn't going to be as easy to maneuver as it used to be.
Right. So let's kind of move on to the next owie for Slo County consumers. So SloCog is moving ahead, I guess, with this half-cent sales tax increase.
Right.
It's heading for some sort of vote where, you know, the hope was that it was going to require a two-thirds majority per Prop 13 to be able to pass, but there's futzing with this idea of a citizens petition. What, we explain that process and what's that all about?
Well, so the polling for the SloCog measure, which has been in the works for about a year now, is not real promising. It's looking like the support for the measure, which is a half-cent sales tax dedicated towards transportation, it probably won't get more than a high 50% range, mm-hmm. and it needs to get 66. It needs to get two-thirds vote. So there is a court measure that allows for a citizens' initiative that only requires a simple majority. And so there is a group of business people that are moving forward with a citizens initiative. They've already started gathering signatures, and they're starting sort of full force this week to gather 12,400 signatures, valid signatures, meaning that they have to get probably close to 20,000 total signatures, because some of them won't be valid. And that if they can qualify that for the ballot, it will only require a simple majority in November to raise that half-cent sales tax. The signature gathering process, though, is challenging. They have a short period of time to do it. The signatures are going to cost them $14 per signature. That's a lot of money between now and I believe the deadline is around June. So they've got a short amount of time to gather a lot of signatures and raise the money to be able to afford to do that.
So, folks, if you don't want your taxes to go up when the people standing in front of Trader Joe's try to get you to sign something. Be really careful what you're signing.
On the other hand, if you do want transportation improvements, you know, this is the avenue to take to do it.
Well, again, I mean, I guess the way I look at it, and again, obviously, I don't think we should have higher taxes in the county under any circumstances. When you think that the county has a $1 billion budget, and probably with all the other municipalities and government entities, there's another $1 billion of budgets out there. Yeah, yeah. How much would it take? This will only raise $35 million
right.
a year.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that all of these government entities should sharpen their pencils and find $35 million to improve the roads.
Well, I agree with you. And, you know, you can make a very good case for the half-cent sales tax. You can make a very good case against it. So I will say that SLOCOG has done a good job of sort of putting up guardrails to make sure that the money wouldn't be spent on silly things. It's not going to be spent on a lot of bike paths and hiking trails and parks and buses and that kind of stuff. It will be spent on roads. But we already live in a very expensive community, and our taxes should go towards the things that we prioritize the most, and transportation should be one of those, and our county isn't doing that.
Right.
Our current board of supervisors are at fault. It's the majority on the board that spend the money on other things, and by the time, you know, we need to have roads repaired and transportation projects done, they've spent it all on other things.
Right. You know, and again, we'll talk about trying to get the majority back on the board in the next segment. But but real quickly, this wasn't a topic I was going to throw into the conversation, but we have a couple extra minutes here. And then I do want to talk about the Paso groundwater thing. But, you know, I noticed that the voter ID initiative,
right?
The Carl DeMeo has been pushing. They've got the signatures apparently. Uh-huh. You know, how do you think that if it gets on the ballot, how do you think that voter ID proposition is going to play?
From what I understand, it polls at about 70 to low 70% range.
Mm-hmm.
So it crosses party lines. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, look, you know, I can't do anything anymore without showing an ID. Why should I be able to vote without showing an ID? And we know that the voter registration process is very loosey-goosey. You can sign up to vote on a postcard, send it in, and then you get all your ballots through the mail. No one is ever checking to see that you are who you said you were when you signed up. And no one is checking to see if six ballots come to a residence, that those six ballots are cast by real people.
We got a call. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question for Greg?
Just a statement about taxes.
Sure.
For government, it wouldn't matter how much we gave them. It'll never be enough.
That's true. That's true. That's an excellent question to ask your liberal friends, is how much tax is too much?
They should require, for any proposed new tax on the ballot or wherever else it's coming from, that they have to put ads on every form of media telling us, although we pay the most taxes in California than anywhere else, we're not paying enough. We need to pay more.
Yeah. I think you have 100% agreement here. So thanks for your call.
Okay.
All right. Before the break, we got about 4 minutes, 5 minutes left here. Let's talk about the never-ending saga of the Paso Robles Groundwater Sustainability Agency.
Right.
And you know, we'll talk about the fallowing and the dust and the weeds and the solar panels in a minute. They're now doing, I guess, a Prop 26 action to fund the JPA. Yeah. What does that mean, and how does that work?
Well, it's no longer the JPA. It's PRAGA, the Paso Robles Area Groundwater Authority. They are required by the state of California to adopt a groundwater sustainability plan by 2040. Otherwise, the threat is that the state could come in and take over the operation and sort of Bigfoot everything and charge people lots of money and penalties and yada, yada. Not many people really believe that that's going to happen. No. But at any rate, you know, we do need to have groundwater sustainability in the Paso Basin. The question is, what do we need to do to achieve sustainability, and how do we pay for it? And so the first step that's been taken after they've already spent $7 million in this endeavor, and they've had nothing to show for it but a couple of binders full of some consultants' reports and studies and so forth. But they are doing this following. But they have to have an agency that's going to oversee all of this. And in order to fund that now, their next move is going to be to do what they call a Prop 26 taxation. It's fees, not technically they want to distinguish between taxes and fees. They're going to call this fees, which is going to pay for the oversight of whatever they're going to do in the future to attain sustainability. Not many people have a lot of faith in PRAGA. We saw that when they had the recent vote on the taxes that they wanted to implement initially. Now we're going to see them try to take money from overliers on a Prop 26 basis. We don't know exactly yet how they're going to do it, how they're going to structure it, who they're going to tax, and whether de minimis users, the small, well-funded properties, well-provided, I should say, whether they'll be taxed or not. And so there's a lot of debate still over how they're going to structure it, but they need to raise $1.3 million on an annual basis to what they call keep the lights on.
So why are you... Okay, so explain this to me. What's the distinction between the JPA and PRAGA?
Well, the JPA was formed as with a tax structure.
Okay.
The tax structure was rejected on the... I'm trying to remember the number now. Was it 118?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And so that went away...
218,
because,
yeah.
218, that's right. That went away because the property owners that were subjected to that measure rejected it. They said, no, we don't have confidence in what you're doing, and we don't want to play. So that went away, and now it is PRAGA, the Paso Robles area.
So is that the five existing,
yes,
the five previously existing,
right,
authorities that were established?
Right.
So are they going back to operating under the original memorandum of understanding?
We think they should, but right now that they're trying to do something different.
Okay. All right. You know, I hear the bumper music. When we return, we'll discuss Slo County economic development, which might help our tax situation here, especially Diablo Canyon, the straw man of offshore drilling, and rent control in San Luis Obispo. So stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Rigotti. The U.S., Israel, and Iran continue to launch strikes across the Middle East. Speaking during a meeting with German Chancellor Friedrich Merz at the White House today, President Trump defends the military action.
If we didn't do what we're doing right now, you would have had a nuclear war and they would have taken out many countries, because you know what? They're sick people.
Iran denies seeking a nuclear weapon. New details on the mass shooting in Austin, Texas last weekend. Fox's Brooke Taylor reports.
Police say the suspect started shooting at people outside a popular college bar near the University of Texas just hours after Iran's supreme leader was killed. The shooter, who was wearing a hoodie with Property of Allah across the front and holding a rifle and then a T-shirt with an Iranian flag underneath, was killed by officers.
The case is being investigated as a possible terrorist attack. America's listening to Fox News.
With the big, beautiful bill comes new tax laws, and for business owners, that means more rules, more details, and more chances to miss important savings. This is Billy Gallant with your locally owned and operated H&R Block offices. We stay on top of every tax law change so your business stays compliant and keeps more of what it earns. From deductions and credits to full business tax preparation, our experienced tax professionals handle it all with accuracy and personal service you can trust. Don't let new tax laws cost your business time or money. Call your local H&R Block office today to make an appointment and get your business taxes done right.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Greg Haskin, the executive director of CoLab. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Let's talk economic development here. I think this is an important topic, and you mentioned it earlier, Greg. I guess the good news is Diablo Canyon's got a—it's got it of sorts. The good news is Diablo Canyon's been okayed for the next 10 years now, right?
No.
I thought it was...
They've been okayed to 2030.
Oh, okay, good.
So, well, that's good. It is very good. The next step is, now that they've got all of the state oversight out of the way, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission gives them their final permit to operate through 2030. They have, from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, everything they need to operate to 2045, except they need to have state-enabling legislation. So we need to go back to whether the governor's going to lead this through or whether it's state legislature that's going to lead it through. We need enabling legislation from the state to be able to operate to 2045. But the reason that it's an economic development issue is that the Diablo Canyon plant plays a big role in our local economy. They have the largest county private employer. They pay an enormous amount of taxes, and they contribute, obviously, to the stability of our state grid as well. So that's a big thing, and it's going to continue to be a big thing until we get state legislation that allows it to operate to 2045.
So what kind of extortion did PG&E have to put up with to keep the plant open, and how? Because ultimately that's going to get passed on to us.
Yeah, it was outrageous. They, you know, they have a lot of property around the Diablo Canyon plant, and they were required by the Coastal Commission to dedicate a lot of that to conservancy property, and which was fine if they wanted to do it, but they didn't want to do it. And ultimately, it has a lot of value that the state ratepayers are going to pay. And that property now goes off of the tax rolls as it becomes nonprofit conservancy property. So, you know, there are economic impacts.
That impacts the state budget, right?
It impacts our county budget, too.
Does it?
Yeah, because it's county property. And so, and now the county's worried that it may be on the hook for some of the preservation and ongoing maintenance of that property. So, there's a lot of economic impact that comes into play.
I had Tom Bordenaro on last week, and he said that the PG&E pays their tax assessments to the state, not the county.
Through a unitary tax.
Right.
The county gets a portion of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they're trying to sort it all out right now, because the property, for a while, the value is diminished, and now it is bumped up a little bit because it has a 2.5 year contract still, or three year contract roughly, before they have to start shutting it down again. If they get the continuation to 2045, the value goes up, as you know, because you assess businesses. The longer the lease you have from a tenant, the more valuable your property
right.
is. Well, it's the same approach with the power plant.
Do you think the leftists in the state legislature are really going to go along with this? I mean, or they seem to be oblivious. You know, we talked to Katie about the this carbon credit thing that they're throwing on the oil petroleum right. people, and right. I mean, are they going to hold this thing up continually forever?
Well, we don't know. It's sort of a religious sect of people that are anti-nuclear, and they tend to be gray. They tend to be old hippies. And so a lot of the people in the state legislature these days are a new generation, and we hope that they see that we have to have that base power in the state. We, you know, it's almost not quite 10% of the state's base power comes from Diablo Canyon, and if we get rid of that and we can't backfill it with reliable energy from other sources, then we're in serious trouble. And they see the need growing. The demand to the state grid is growing because of AI and because of a lot of the other data centers that are coming into play around the state. So they may be cutting off their nose to spite their face if they won't renew Diablo till 2045.
Well, one of the things I didn't have a chance to talk to Katie about was the billionaire tax and what that's going to do to our economic development in the state.
Already having an impact.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. It's huge.
And the interesting thing is the people in Silicon Valley for many years have been sort of cocktail circuit Democrats. And they're starting to see that the Democrats are hurting their business. And so we're hoping, and Steve Hilton talks about this a lot, we're hoping that maybe they'll start seeing the light and say, you know, we're not going to fund a lot of these crazy liberals anymore. We're going to actually maybe put our money towards people that are a little more common sense.
So, God, I was going to ask you a question. It just flew out of my mind. Are you seeing, I mean, you mentioned economic development and the importance of it, because that creates some more tax revenue for the county.
Yeah.
Are you seeing anything else that on the horizon that's happening in the county that would be positive in that regard?
Well, there is some. I mean, we saw the recent approval of the Dana Reserve down in South County, Napomo. That's going to be a big development that'll bring a lot of jobs and a lot of economic activity. But economic development doesn't just grow the tax base. It grows the economy. It creates a dynamic system that people can benefit from in so many ways. So we hope that we're going to see more focus on what can happen throughout San Luis Obispo County to create jobs, to create a tax base, to create economic growth that we all see a benefit from.
Well, we'll talk about the District 4 race here in a second and the importance of that to economic development. But talk about an anti-economic development effort. Let's talk a little bit about the People's Republic of San Luis Obispo and their efforts now they're calling it a registry, but what does that really mean and what's going on with that?
They've taken the first step towards rent control, maybe more steps than the first, but they're creating now a rental registry where if you're a landlord, you have to divulge a bunch of your business details, you have to describe your properties in a lot of very technical fashion, and you have to report how much rent you're getting. But you'll have to, ultimately, if it follows suit with the mobile home parks, you're going to have to disclose how much you owe on the property and how much money, how much profit you're making from the rental income. And this is being pushed by a renters union and a tobacco coalition. The tobacco coalition is there to make sure, and I hate cigarettes, I hate smoking. I got no patience for it at all, but I don't like the idea that they're going to require landlords to prohibit smoking in their properties. That's between the landlord and the tenant. But now the county, or the city in this case, the city government, is going to intervene, and they're going to be the police, come around and administer fines and administer regulations and tell the landlord what they can and can't do. And give the tenants, if you're a tenant, this is probably a good idea, but they're going to tell the tenant, here's how you can manipulate, you know, how much the landlord can charge you, and here's how you can hold back your rent payments if you feel that your rights have been violated in some way or another. And it's going to result in some pretty grim times for the rental industry in San Luis Obispo.
Is this being done elsewhere in California?
It is being done in a number of cities around the state. Tend to be more liberal cities that you're not too surprised about. But once it gets a foothold in San Luis Obispo, it'll transfer to other cities.
It'll be contagious.
Yeah, it really will. And it's going to be ugly.
And
who would have thought that San Luis Obispo would be a rent control kind of a city, but it's trending that way.
Is there going to be any kind of legal action to try to stop it?
Well, there's always legal action, but this is a practiced, organized kind of a thing, and so they learn, they make mistakes in one city, they learn, and they move it to another city.
Got a caller. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question or comment?
Don't you guys understand that the government knows what's best for you? Come on, don't complain.
Okay? I try not to think just of that after I wake up in the morning.
Just do what you're told. Hey, I think Tom Steyer, I may be incorrect, but I think Tom Steyer had some plan with commercial landlords to like tax them based on the unrealized value of their property, and he was like alleging that they were refusing to sell their vacant property because they would, I mean, I don't know. There's some way they were going to do like unrealized gains. Do you think that it might ever come here, or what's your opinion on that is?
Well, you know, what you're describing is exactly what that billionaire's right. tax is. They don't tax your income. They're taxing your assets. And so you may have $1 billion in assets, but you may only have, you know, $50,000 in the bank or whatever it is. You may have very little income this year because you've made a lot of investments and you don't have a whole lot of money coming in at the moment. But they're going to tax you on that $1 billion of assets that you have anyway. And that's why so many of them are looking at moving away. They don't want to have sudden cash hits on stuff that is asset rather than money in the bank. And so Tom Steyer is a perfect example of the kind of people that want to tax wealth rather than tax income. And that's a very scary concept.
Yeah, he's right there with Bernie Sanders. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Oh, well, one more thing.
Yeah.
The little vibe check of that video I saw of Tom Steyer was immediately like, this is so unpopular. Why would you even do this? It's just I am always astounded at the government's thought that they can just regulate everyone's behavior into compliance. It's never worked. It's never will work. It's disheartening. And you know what? The state of Nevada and Arizona will benefit from all of the economic activity that will move to those states.
Yeah, you're right.
And I know they already
are. It's happening already.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thanks for your call. Whoops. Well, you didn't have to just hang up.
No, but the mantra of liberals these days is to do more, go higher, reach further, demand more than anybody
right.
before. And that's how you prove your chops as a liberal.
And when they don't, and on this billionaire's tax, when they don't collect as much money as they thought they were going to collect, they'll drop it down to a millionaire's tax.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll be the middle class.
Yeah.
That because of course everybody in California, you know, the average house in San Luis Obispo County is what, $900,000.
Yeah,
you know, so it's an awful thing that these folks are doing. Just real quickly, speaking of liberals like Tom Steyer, you wrote a very interesting article in the last newsletter about the straw man called offshore oil drilling in San Luis Obispo County. I'd like you to explain that sure. to all the voters that are listening.
Well, let me first explain COLAB, because I think a lot of people don't quite understand.
Yeah.
Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business. And we have a weekly update that you can see on our website, colabslow.org. In that recent article, I point out that we have some candidates around the county that are desperately trying to get people's attention, and they're making a lot of noise about how they're protecting us from offshore oil drilling because the Trump administration has opened up some leases in offshore California. And so they're making it sound as if they're saving us from the plight of a bunch of oil rigs off our coast and the worry about spills and that kind of thing. Well, as it turns out, our entire coastline is protected from any kind of offshore oil drilling through, in one case, in the south part of the county, the Chumash Marine Preserve, and in the north, the Monterey Bay Offshore Preserve. And there's no oil drilling that will be allowed in those preserves. And that's our entire coastline. So despite the fact that there's really no offshore oil to be had off of our coast, and there's no structure, if there was oil to be had, to receive that oil from the offshore rigs. So, you know, it's all folly. It's all a bunch of
BS.
Yeah, and I'm trying to find a kind name that I can get away with saying on the radio, but it is folly, and it's an insult to voters to stand in front of them and say, I'm protecting you from offshore oil drilling because I'm making sure that Trump doesn't get away with it and yada, yada. Well, it's not a threat, and there's nothing to be protected from.
Well, so speaking of liberal obfuscation, I'll use that word as opposed to lies. Let's talk about Supervisor Fourth District Supervisor Jimmy Paulding.
Yeah,
you've covered that story as well.
Right.
You know, he kind of tripped on himself in reporting Adam Verdin as being in violation of election rules for contributions. Right. Right. He was told by the Fair Practices Political Practices
Fair
Commission,
Political Practice Commission.
That he was wrong.
Yeah.
But yesterday I saw another Facebook post where he's going on and on about Adam.
Yeah.
And Eric Gorham made a big, great response to it, that he was, you know, and what's with this guy?
Well, he's a little desperate because Adam Verdin raised more money than Jimmy Paulding did. And so that, you know, gets Verdin lots of credibility, and it makes Paulding look weak.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's running around with his hair on fire because he's unhappy being put in that position. And so he's making a big deal about how Paulding has accepted some donations. I'm sorry, Verdin has accepted donations from builders. Well, Paulding, you know, will tell you that he's pro-housing. And how do you create housing without builders? But he's making a big fuss saying that you shouldn't take donations from builders because you're making land use decisions on the Board of Supervisors. Yet he's taking money from labor unions, and the Board of Supervisors also makes a lot of decisions about contracts that labor unions do. So I think we have a call coming in.
Oh, thanks for noticing.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question or comment?
Good afternoon. You're on one of my favorite subjects of the day these days.
How you doing, Cody?
Mr. Paulding.
Okay, go for it, Cody.
An arrogant, little, immature man trying to be somebody. That's who he is, and don't make any mistake about it.
Well,
he's been educated by his parents. He's been coddled by his parents. Yeah. And I think they made the down payment on his house. He ran against Len Compton. One of my jobs in a campaign is to find out about the opponent. You always want to know about the opponent, and I knew nothing about Mr. Paulding. Well, I find out that I don't need to worry too much about it, at least for my own personal voting, because I'm not only not in the district, but I wouldn't vote for him anyway, because he's useless. He's worthless.
So
he talks a game, but he doesn't deliver because he can't.
Well, so you said that he's trying to be somebody. I would tell you that he's trying to be somebody, or he's trying to be everything to everybody, because he's all over the map on positions. He's been for and against Prop 13. He's been for and against the continued operation at Diablo Canyon, and the list goes on and on. Housing is a great example. He says he's for housing, and then he votes against housing projects.
Yes, so, that's the point.
Yeah. So
he runs his mouth until he gets his voting instructions from Mr. Gibson.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
So, Cody, let me ask you a question, because we're coming up on the break here in about 20 seconds.
Okay.
I know we talk. I think Adam Verdin's a great guy. It would certainly change politics in our county if we had a three-person conservative majority on the Board of Supervisors. But I get asked, well, why should we care in District 1? So as a District 1 guy, what would you say to voters who are listening right now that they should be doing to help Adam get elected?
Because the county votes has five votes.
Right.
And they all matter. And one at a time, they'll make those votes on subjects that you or others might be interested in. And they might want them passed, but there's a faction of the Board of Supervisors that doesn't want them passed. However, if the political acrimony becomes too great, they can't afford to turn down some of the efforts that are being made by people in this county. And right now, for the last 10, 12 years, I've been working with people trying to save our water. And if you don't think these people aren't after your water, you would be mistaken. I don't care what they tell you, because they'll lie right through their teeth.
All right. Cody, I got the bumper music coming up, but thanks for your call.
We'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir. Take care. And Greg, we'll come back to the District 4
sure.
race on the other side of the break. So stand by, folks. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages fell, but off their worst levels of the day, with the Dow down over 1,200 points in earlier trading, as investors brace for the impact of a widening Middle East conflict on oil prices, inflation, and global trade. Industries like airlines and cruise operators fell for a second day on higher fuel fears. Most all of the 11 S&P 500 sectors were lower, with tech and industrials the biggest laggards. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks were mostly lower, led by Tesla, Alphabet, and Nvidia. However, software stocks outperformed and were up for a second day. The Dow winners, IBM, Microsoft, and Salesforce. The Dow decliners, Caterpillar, United Health, and Amgen. The Dow falling 404 points. The Nasdaq lower by 232. S&P 500 down 65. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Varsky, invested in you.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers welcomes Heather Bourdain to its team of commercial property casualty professionals. With more than 20 years of experience, Heather can design insurance solutions that protect your business. Whether you're a contractor, winery owner, farmer, rancher, or manufacturer, Heather is the right person to survey your needs and develop innovative solutions to protect your most important asset. Contact Heather today, 805-540-3900, or Heather at AdlerBelmontGroup.com.
Do you worry about where to take your car for repairs? Who you can trust? Mike and his team at the Autobahn are a safe bet. Located in Templeton, behind the donut shop, just off Main Street. They service Mercedes, BMWs, Volkswagens, Porsches, and Audis. And the Autobahn is certified in those cars and in repairing Land Rovers, Volvos, and Mini Coopers. Call the Autobahn, 434-2200.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Greg Haskin, Executive Director of CoLab. You can still call. Oh, we have a call. Call in with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. What's your question or comment?
Well, I want to end your show with a really good comment on the question that you just asked, Cody.
Hi, Greg.
How does North County care about District 4? Who helped vote for District 2, Bruce Gibson, to take over the basin and kick Debbie and John out?
Jimmy.
Who voted for them guys, both District 4 and District 3, voted to join the JPA with no funding?
So I think, Greg, what you're really saying...
How did they get $600,000 for the 218 vote without stealing it illegally from the grant money?
So, Greg, I think what you're really saying here is that people in District 1 in the North County and need to contribute to Adam and help his campaign. And that and I appreciate the call because that leads us to our next topic. So thanks for your call, okay?
Yeah, and Greg Graywall was entirely right. The board has been dominated by Bruce Gibson, who's been controlling the Paso Water Basin issue for years now. He's retiring, and so we're going to have a change in the board, and it's going to be significant, even if Paulding were to be reelected. But I think Paulding is, right now, his worst enemy.
And we have the District 2 race, which has some interesting dynamics going on, too, right?
Very interesting. Gibson's going to be replaced by either Jim D'Antona or Michael Allen Woody, and that race initially was kind of, everybody thought, well, it's a foregone conclusion that D'Antona's the front runner. And, you know, just looking at the voter registration, he is the front runner because it's a highly Democrat district, almost 2-to-1 dominant Democrat, and he's the Democrat candidate. But there's a huge issue in that district, which is offshore oil, or offshore wind energy. And there's an organization called REACT, which formed to fight that. And they've been very effective. They're well organized. They're very vocal. And they've got a large membership, very grassroots oriented. And that's where Michael Allen Woody comes into play, because he's their guy. And they're not very confident that D'Antona is going to be opposed to the offshore wind development that they are. In fact, they think that he's pro offshore. And so it's going to be a bit of a horse race, I think, for a while.
Yeah.
We just don't know how grassroots is going to play versus, you know, the kind of campaign that they're going to run on the D'Antona side, which is going to be get out the vote for Democrats.
Yeah. So I think, you know, again, what, you know, Greg and Cody and you are saying is, you know, even though we have our district issues here, we really need to think bigger for the county, because it's the votes of those other districts, really, supervisors matter.
Yeah. Well, you know, transportation is a key issue in the North County because a lot of our roads are deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
And the county has contributed a total of just over $6 million annually every year for the last 4 years. To transportation, because the majority of the board has been interested in other things. And so, you know, if we get the board back, John Pichon and Heather Moreno have both said they want to dedicate a lot more towards transportation, but they haven't been able to because of the board majority. Now, if we get Adam Verdin in, the board majority is going to shift, and things like transportation funds are going to shift more in the favor of North County.
Well, and I think, you know, part of the dynamic here, and I know I get some heat about this, is that, you know, I mean, people say, well, Woody's running as an independent, so we can't support him. Or Adam is, may not be not 100%.
Yeah, Adam's not a, you know, a super right winger, but he's a very common sense guy. He's a business guy. He's a guy that has a lot of good vision for our county. That's going to be very different from Jimmy Paulding.
Well, and again, I mean, you need to try to vote for the person and support the people who, you know, are most closely aligned with your thinking, yeah, even though they may not pass some litmus test,
right,
that's out there.
And I should say, by the way, that CoLab is a nonprofit,
right,
nonpartisan organization, but we are very much towards common sense, towards pro-business, and there's a little bit of a division between Verdin and Paulding in that,
yeah,
regard.
In the last minute or so we have left, if you want to share any more thoughts about CoLab or the dinner, yeah, again, I think it's important. You know, I take it for granted because I've been a member of CoLab for so long and supported the organization, but yeah, it's an important watchdog for
it
us.
It is. We are the only organization that attends the County Board of Supervisors meetings every meeting and reports on what they're doing, and tries to bring a more common sense approach to some of their crazy activities. So it's colabslow.org. Our big dinner is March 26th. Katie Grimes, who was on last hour, fantastic reporter. She's going to be our guest speaker. We have a great dinner. We have an open bar. We have a fun auction, and it's going to be a fun evening to be there. So I would highly encourage people to take a look at our website, colabslow.org. Think about coming to our dinner. Think about becoming a member of CoLab, and read our newsletter.
Yeah, Greg, I will say, I go to a bunch of events here in SLO County because I want to be part of the community. But I think the CoLab dinner is definitely the best one of them all. It really is. It's a lot of fun.
We're looking forward to it.
All right, folks, listen, we'll be back. Eric Gorham will be sitting in for me next week, and then I'll be back on the 17th, I believe. So, folks, have a great rest of your week. Take care. We'll be right back.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.